You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. Good. Freezing my ass off here in Illinois. You know, -6 today with -26 with wind chill.
Yeah, I feel bad for you because right now I am walking around in literally just shorts. It is that nice today in California.
Fuck you.
Today we're going to be talking about some Philadelphia Phillies prospects. A better system than the last one we had the pleasure of speaking with. So we'll jump right in. After I remind you, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. Me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. So, Matt, the Phillies are an organization loaded with talent and some talent that we're going to see pretty quick. So why don't we start with guys that are close to the major leagues that are going to have an impact this year?
Sure. I'll jump right out of the gate with my number one prospect, and it might not be who most people think it is, but Scott Kingery for me is that
guy. My boy.
Yeah. Did he go in the RDI?
He has, because I just looked to see if he was still
right.
there.
Right. I looked him up, too. I like him a lot. 304, 359, 530 between AA and AAA with 26 homers and 29 stolen bases. He's a former walk-on at the University of Arizona who has embraced this flyball revolution and kind of turned into a fantasy stud, potentially. During his collegiate career at U of A, he hit 6 career home runs, and he hit 5 last year, and this year he hit 26. it cracks me up because I was trying to figure out, you know, I was watching video and I could see some changes. He made like a leg kick change and lowered his hands a little bit. And, you know, he does all that. And they asked him in interviews, what are you doing differently between your, you know, your whole career and then now? His answer is, I'm just trying to put a good line drive swing on the ball. As opposed to not trying to do that the previous years, which would be a different issue itself, I guess. It's a pretty significant adjustment if you look at his lower half, and it's resulted in fewer ground balls, plus hit tool also, I think, because the approach is so good. Plenty of walks and the average power and plus speed combination. I think he's got the perfect storm for like a couple 20-20 seasons there at the Keystone. He's a good defensive second baseman. And the Phillies did kind of move around with him a little bit at third base last year in preparation for a call-up. It never happened, but he spent some time at third. I don't think that should factor into anything, but they're trying to get some more versatility, which can never hurt. So I like Kingery a lot. He needs to be drafted in every redraft league for 2018, definitely.
All right, any other guys that are close to the majors that we may be looking at for redraft formats, or should we start going away?
I ranked J.P. Crawford number 2 on my list. It was hard. The top 3 guys, I'll get to the third guy in a minute. The top 3 guys were really hard. Ultimately, I went proximity. And Kingery has the offensive upside that J.P. Crawford doesn't. But J.P. Crawford last year, he stumbled out of the gate with Lehigh Valley. 211 in the first half was the batting average. Second half after the All-Star game, 287, 385, 513 line in AAA that led to his call-up. His full season numbers were 243 with a 351 OBP, so that's healthy walk rate, you can tell. 405 slug, 15 homers, and 5 stolen bases. Fantasy upside here, to put it nicely, isn't great, but he's going to play. He's got the safety of having a plus arm, very good defensive skills, which should turn into plus with a little more time, and a very plus walk rate, which should keep him, you know, he's a strong candidate to hit near the bottom of the order initially and then potentially maybe even be I don't want to say leadoff hitter because I don't know if the speed will translate enough to be the leadoff hitter of the future with the Phillies, but I think he could hit second, if not eighth or something like that, for a while. The defense, like I said, is what's going to keep him in the lineup. The quirky thing with Crawford is his, for this year, and at least initially, he's only going to be third base eligible because that's where he played last year. But the Freddie Galvis trade was made with clearing him up for shortstop in mind. So he will definitely, be the shortstop for the Phillies going forward and probably for the next decade. But, he had a cup of coffee list this year, 87 plate appearances, 214, 356, 300 slug. So as you can tell, his walk rate's translated over. Hopefully that's a good sign. And I guess this speaks for development in a whole of prospects. I am actually a fan that he struggled out of the gate last year. Because you looked at several other prospects we talk about, and, the obvious number one guy, I'm not comparing these guys in any sense of the word, but Ronald Acuna, right? You look at his numbers, he's never struggled. He's never had to make that second adjustment or that third adjustment. J.P. Crawford had a very trying year this year in AAA. I mean, he's looking at an OPS of around 660 for most of the season, which is – that's not playable. I don't care what position you play at. You know what I mean? And with the plus defensive skills like that, he struggled, went through adjustments, first-round pick pedigree. His cousin is Carl Crawford. You know, he's got the bloodlines to a sense. He's still extremely young, but he's advanced. He's the type of player I'm going to invest in long-term dynasty leagues. Not as my shortstop, but he's going to be my middle infielder for a while because he's going to accumulate the at-bats. He's going to play. He's a very nice player going forward.
All right. Who else you got that might be close?
Jorge Alfaro for the 27th season in a row. He's on these prospect lists.
But a decent catcher, too, this year, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't quite seen in writing anywhere what they're going to do as far as him. Is he the starter, or is he kind of?
I think he is the starter.
Okay, so they'll bump him up a little bit, but him and Cameron Rupp. Cameron Rupp wasn't terrible, so it's it's fine if you want to sit him or not. But the thing with Alfaro is, this is a weird analogy, so bear with me. You ever go to the gym, right? And you got this guy that works out nothing but his arms.
Mm-hmm.
That's Alfaro, because every flashy tool here is plus. He just skips leg day because he's got plus power for a catcher, a cannon arm, like 80 grade arm. There's no better arm. A very quick release, but the defense and game calling suck. The good power, like, he's got enough power now where even if he doesn't change his approach, which absolutely has to change, it's brutal. Even if it doesn't change, he can still get lucky and hit 15 home runs because he's that strong. But the contact rate is only 69%, 65% in AAA, 69% in the majors. 3% walk rate in the major leagues, 5% in AAA. That's not going to play. And he's going to be the type of player, he's going to be valuable in fantasy circles in the sense that everyone's going to own him at all times, but you're going to drop him because he's going to be so damn frustrating. Because when he's not hitting, he doesn't walk. So he's not going to provide you with any other value. Like J.P. Crawford, he doesn't hit, he's going to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the run scored and everything like that. But Alfaro, I mean, he's a physical freak, double plus raw power, which doesn't happen. Like I said, top of the scale arm, above average speed for a catcher as well. Stolen bases can't translate if you don't walk. I'm not sure he's ever going to be the asset that he should be as a catcher with a couple steals. Like, he could be Romuto-ish a little bit in the stolen base department, but I don't think he's going to play because he doesn't walk enough. He's a lotto ticket in Dynasty in every sense of the word just because he's so raw and rough around the edges. 31% strikeout rate and 3% walk rate in the major leagues. I don't even know what to think about that. But 241, 291, 358, 7 homers in AAA this year. Didn't blow the doors off, but he's probably bored playing in AAA again. He's super young. I believe he's like 22, 21 years old. And he's a guy that...
Alfaro's 24.
24? Okay, a little older than I thought. Okay, that's my fault on that. But he's still young for a catching prospect that's knocking down the door.
Mm-hmm.
And,
This is why we don't invest in catching prospects.
Right, because he has every tool you want, right?
Mm-hmm, and he's been on the top of, like, catcher prospect lists for, God, it feels like 6-7 years.
I went back and looked it up, and yeah, you know what? I should have known, because right in my first sentence in his write-up is that this is the sixth season we're writing about the 24-year-old Alfaro, because, you know, when he's 18 and an amateur free agent, he gets signed.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on prospect lists, I'm not even exaggerating, for 6 seasons now.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is exactly why when Matt and I caution against investing in catching prospects, especially ones that aren't close to the majors.
Right.
This is exactly why, because it wasn't that long ago that this guy was considered like a top 30, top 40 prospect in just all of, you know, fantasy baseball at the catcher, you know, and as a catcher. And people have been rostering him and drafting him in dynasty leagues for far too long. And now you've got a guy that may come up, or, you know, may get 300 plate appearances and hit, you know, 15 home runs with a crappy average, you know, and that's a catcher too. But
right, how much do you want to hold on to a catcher too for 6 years?
You know, what players did you pass on in a dynasty league because you were continuing to hold on to Jorge Alfaro?
Right. Right. And this is an extreme example of this, because, I mean, a lot of times these players you hold on to don't even pan out. Mm-hmm. And he has a chance to pan out, but it's a very good chance that he's never going to live up to the investment you made in him.
Mm-hmm.
So the Philly system's nice. And, you know, having a guy like him, I still have him. I can't quite give up on him fully. I still have him number 8 because he's going to get playing time and stuff. So I have a number 8 on my list. Another guy that's going to see some impact this year is Roman Quinn. He's also been around for a while. Second round pick in 2011. He was a former shortstop. He's one of the fastest players in the game, which is why he's always going to be on these lists. His speed is game changing. I put it in the Hamilton and Buxton category. Last year was the first season in his minor league career that he didn't swipe at least 29 bases. It's only because he played in 45 games, because he had an elbow injury to his non-throwing arm. But in that 45 games, he still slashed 274, 344, 389 with 10 stolen bases. 10 steals in 45 games in AAA is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a switch hitter. He's probably a fourth outfielder now just because he can't stay healthy, and the Phillies kind of starting to get established guys out there. Contact-oriented offensive approach, but he strikes out a little bit too much to utilize it fully. He's still at around 20 to 25% strikeout rate, depending on the league, which is too high for a slap hitter. But I think he's a must-own in NL only, because one injury, he should be the guy. And that stolen bases are, I mean, we saw, I'm forgetting the guy's name right now, the guy who's traded to the Tampa Bay Rays. Malik Smith. He's not a good baseball player, and he gets owned everywhere just because of one category, right?
Mm-hmm.
Roman Quinn is a better hitter than him. Roman Quinn is a better defensive player than him, and he's going to play more. If he gets that time, Roman Quinn's going to be a guy that needs to be owned in all formats. And in Dynasty League, he might be a guy you can get for relatively cheap right now, or that's probably available because, he was a second-round pick in 2011. We as the fantasy baseball community are very impatient. Waiting 6 years for a guy that with no power might not be something somebody wants to do. So there's a good chance he might be out there.
Well, I mean, the only issue I think with Quinn that I have in terms of playing time is the addition of Carlos Santana to first base moves Rhys Hoskins to the outfield.
Right,
and
that hurts
Williams
him a lot.
And Altair,
Odubel Herrera.
Yeah, I mean, so it's, you know, if Quinn could play like a middle infield position too, I'd be like all over him, because
right,
then they could make him like a super utility kind of guy.
Used to play shortstop.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see him happening. But
yeah,
he used
I don't
to.
See it happening either. And so it's like, you know, so probably the last, you know, bench spot is him and Tommy Joseph, and are they gonna, you know,
right,
send down Joseph? They probably should, but
they the Phillies have a lot of outfielders too. I'll get to this next guy. I don't know what to do with this guy, honestly, so I ranked him 13th. Dylan Cousins, second-round pick in 2012, so he's got the decent pedigree. 2006, he was the AA MVP, 276, 350, 591 with 40 homers. A lot of people said it was because of the ballpark he played in AA Redding, and it probably was, at least part of it, because then he went to AAA this year in Lehigh Valley. And keep in mind, Rhys Hoskins was right alongside Cousins. They're kind of the Bash brothers together in Redding, I should say. And Hoskins, we all know what he did. Cousins this year in AAA, 210, 301, 418, 27 homers, 8 stolen bases.
I like some of that line and hate the different
right,
part. You know?
Right. Plus raw power and usable speed. You look at Cousins, he's got those two abilities, plus raw power and the average speed. Just because of those two alone, he has to be owned in every format, in Dynasty Leagues, I think. Yeah, he had a rotten year in AAA, but the upside here is potentially huge. It's just now he's got more obstacles to playing time. The deck is clearly stacked against him. I'm not betting on it happening. He had one thing really work on for me this year, and his 31% strikeout rate during his MVP season in 2016, way too high, 31%. But when you're hitting 40 home runs, you can deal with it. Mm-hmm. When you're hitting 27 homers, you can't afford your strikeout rate to jump up to 35%,
yeah,
which is what happened last year. So odds are this is an investment that's going to go down for nothing, but you still have to own him somewhere because the skills are so crazy. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
That power speed.
He's got Aaron Judge-like power.
Yeah, you sure know? Does. Yeah, and Judge is a good athlete too. And
but
Cousins
he could also end up being Kyle Blanks.
Right. And he's more Kyle Blanks than Judge, but mm-hmm. You have to own him to find out because he's the type of guy in Dynasty you can also get for cheap. He's going to be up this year. If the Phillies ever are going to believe in him or are going to use him, it's going to be this year. If the Phillies don't call him up this year, he's done with them. Mm-hmm. It just has to be how it works out. You know what I mean? And the Phillies, I think the Phillies are going to make a strong run at Bryce Harper, and I think they have a good chance at Bryce Harper. I don't think he ends up there, but I think they're going to try their damnedest to get him. The Phillies have, no money committed, except for Carlos Santana now, for, next year. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Next year, meaning 2019. And they have all this young guys coming up, so they're kind of – I don't want to say they're the Yankees because nobody is. But this strong farm system with one or two high-priced guys, that's fine. It's a drop in the bucket, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they're a team to watch in that aspect. But, Dylan Cousins is running out of chances. If he's going to do anything, it's going to have to be this year.
All right. What about some other guys that might be either near or maybe start pushing farther away?
Sixto, baby. Sixto Sanchez. There's not many starting pitchers in the game with higher upside. 80 grade fastball. Future frontline starter. Throws strikes. Fastball sits 94-98. Then clocked as high as 101. Cuts it, sinks it. Has the two seamer with a tremendous run. Yeah, he throws six pitches. He's got two different changeups. The primary one is a swing and miss pitch with fade that just drops off the table. Curveball and a slider get swing and misses as well. He works fast. He struck out I watched a YouTube clip of him, pitching, and I watched MILB TV all the time. He struck out a hitter in 28 seconds.
Oh.
Just because he works fast. It's refreshing to see that.
What Major League Baseball wants right there.
Right. And Baseball Prospectus took a lot of heat for ranking him 18th on their 2017 midseason list, which you got to remember, that's not fantasy. So I still think it's an aggressive ranking, and I still think they did it partly just to get their name out there with him because, you want to be the first on a guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right now I kind of buy it. I kind of dig it, actually. I love the arsenal. I could watch YouTube clips on this dude all day. You find something that you like. I mean, look at the frame. 5'10", 160.
Yeah, so he's going to fill out.
Right, and he's already touching 101. Mm. your window to acquire him in Dynasty Leagues is probably slammed shut.
He's still available in the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational Draft.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see where a guy like him goes because it's hard to put value on him because he's years away.
Mm-hmm.
He was only in high A last year. Potentially, though, if the Phillies want to speed up that window, he could compete. He could be a major part of what they're doing in 2019 if they want him to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if they're going to take their time with him, which they should and could, they shouldn't, actually. I take that back. They should bring him. See, as far as pitching prospects go, I'm a subscriber to the theory that you have limited bullets in your arm. You're going to get hurt.
Might as well get them up at the major league level if they're ready.
Right. And I think every once in a while, there's this late bloomer that comes around that's 25 in AAA. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That is a prospect. But I would move if my guy, if I was running an organization and I had a stud that was 22, 23 years old, he'd be up in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Because
why waste those bullets, you know, of Brett Honeywell down in AAA when you could be helping, he could be out helping the major league club.
And how do you learn how to get major league hitters out?
By facing them.
Right, and what are you going to do in AAA? Oh, he was in the majors once for a month, and I did well against him, so that's going to no, like, that doesn't translate. AAA is a wasteland for pitching prospects most of the time. Most of the time it's, you know, your 27, 28-year-olds that throw a lot of junk and don't have a lot of velocity. If you could hit AAA, you're feasting on breaking balls most of the time. That's just how it works out. But Sanchez is a stud, and I hope the Phillies rush him. Not rush him, but their timetable should be 2019 when they sign, when they make a run at some of these big free agents. Like A.J. Pollock's out there and guys like that. Probably Blackman would be a hell of a fit there. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys, like, even if they don't get Harper, they could – he's going to be the ace of that staff, and it's him. They got Adonis Medina, another skinny, low budget. They signed him for $70,000, which is nothing for major league terms in 2014. Gets the fastball up to 97, touches 92, 95 with severe ton of movement. Command is still iffy, but, I mean, he's secondaries are coming along. He struck out 133 guys in 119 innings in A-ball. So he's developing. The strikeouts jumped the big year, the big time for Medina, which I have him fifth on my list. Average, he's got a slider now. He kind of ditched the curveball a little bit and going heavier on the slider, and it's taken off for him. They got him as protectable arm. Another guy, Sir Anthony Dominguez. He's the oldest of this group. There's another couple, two more guys after this that I want to touch on for the arm side. This team is stacked on their pitching. I wrote on Dominguez's profile, the Phillies are cornering the market on skinny, high upside, right-handed pitching prospects. And that's another one of these guys. He's the oldest one of these projectable fire breathers, but he's the one that he gets it up to 98 miles an hour, has life on the pitch, curveball flashes plus. This team is going to be stacked in a few years if even – there's five guys I wrote on here that I like a lot that are high upside arms. Say even one or two of them pan out. That's huge.
Yeah.
The highest upside of the bunch, non-Sixto Sanchez division, is Francisco Morales for me. He's only 17 years old. But at 17 years old in rookie ball, he posted a 3.05 ERA, had 44 strikeouts in 41 innings. Walks too many guys, but he's 17. I don't need to tell you all the risks that come in with this. What I'm going to tell you is the potential. Number two upside for me, because I think he can develop A-plus pitch at least, and especially if the command comes up and gets a little better. He's 6'4". He's a skinny kid. He's got projectable frame, high ceiling. He's a guy I'm scooping up everywhere I can for nothing because no one knows who Francisco Morales is right now. So jump on that. Everyone knows who Franklin Quilome is. He's kind of the pitching prospect that I'm kind of a little bit down on compared to all the rest of these guys, and he's a monster himself. 6'6". Since 93-95, a serious run. Reading a bunch of things about the Phillies prospects. Quilome had some trouble repeating his delivery this year. Because he was listed at like 6'2", like a year and a half ago. Now he's 6'6".
Oh, wow.
So it's hard to reel for him to reel in the extra 4 inches. And he's having timing issues with the delivery. Once he figures that out, which he will because he's an athlete, he has a 12-6 hammer curve. 93-95 sinking fastball. He needs a third pitch, which is really ultimately going to decide his role. But every good pitch needs dominant late-inning relievers, and he could fit that profile too. And I think nowadays, even in the fantasy realm, I think you'd rather own, if you can't get an ace pitcher, right, and you get mid-rotation starters, you know, some of them develop into aces, some of them don't. As opposed, you would rather own a guy that has a chance to be a power back-end reliever over a back-end starter, right?
Yeah.
Right, and I think that has value, and I think that gets slept on a lot. I think Quilome has potential to be a number three starter, but with the way this organization is, with all their arms, I think he might be the kind of guy that gets transitioned to the bullpen because he doesn't have a third pitch. The command's a little shaky. He can go potential all out and be high 90s with a big ball. I think he could be a nice late-inning guy. Let's see. Your boy, Jalen Ortiz. Big bonus, $4 million in 2015, 302, 401, 560 slash as a 19-year-old. I'm looking at 18 years old. 8 homers. in limited games, 70 raw power for me. He's listed at 6'3", 215. He's not 215. He's like 250.
Yeah,
250, 260.
He's a
big boy. He's a massive dude, and he's athletic. He can run. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you look at the guy, oh, he's automatically going to play first, which is still probably the projected outcome for Ortiz. He's probably still likely a first baseman. But he can fake it in the outfield right now. And he's going to be on my top 100 list, be on the back end. But he's not getting any hype anywhere. When are you reading about Dylan Ortiz anywhere?
I'm the only person who's been talking about it for 2 years.
You've been way out ahead on that. Yeah, definitely. I have a number four in this system right behind the big three we talked about earlier. So he's a big, massive boy, big power potential. He can be everybody's big baby boy that they love, replacing cult heroes like Kyle Schwarber and such. I wasn't on the Schwarber train, but you know he's going to have a cult following like that because the power is ridiculous. And he has good idea what he's doing. I mean, you look at the OBP is 100 points higher than the average, and A-ball against people older than him. That's awesome. So he's going to be nice. I liked Adam Haseley a lot coming out of the draft, but nice power-speed combination, I thought, anyways. And I still think so, but I think the power is a little bit more – I think I projected the power a little bit too aggressively. The batted ball approach, he hits the ball on the ground too much to ever hit more than the 15 or 18 home runs, which I think I project him for now. I think I had 20 to 25 even if he got lucky earlier. But, you know, he's a Virginia, too, the Virginia hitters. So there's a lot of question marks coming out of guys like that. But the Phillies, you know, he's also a unique case because he was also one of the starting pitchers. He was one of the weekend starters for the University of Virginia baseball team. So the Phillies drafted him. They didn't want to push him too hard because, you know, he had a lot of innings on his arm, which is weird for an outfielder, but he did. They didn't push him aggressively. He kind of sat at rookie ball. And he ended up making it A ball. I'm sorry. They didn't push him harder. 284, 357, 405, three homers, and six stolen bases. So that's nice for half season. And even, you know, especially one when they're not trying to be aggressive with you. They pretty much told him, you're not getting called up. Just sit here and hit. But he's kind of got a little bit of the Virginia swing, which is kind of similar to what I saw when I talked about the Stanford swing. And the Virginia preaches contact, and they have a lot of guys hit the ball too much. It's also a natural inside-out swing, which kind of steps a little bit from the power projection. But he has above-average speed, should stick in center field. I think he's a center fielder of the future for the organization. I think aggressively, 280, 18 homers, and 15 steals is a good ceiling for this guy. And I think that's a very, very nice player. He's the center fielder of the future, which I want to stress that, because there's another guy they drafted first overall in 2016, Mickey Moniak. Now, I have Mickey Moniak 12th in my rating for the system. And that 12th is basically because I'm hedging a bet. I'm hedging myself because I went down and I struggled with this ranking a lot. My report here is he's been disappointment since he came to pro ball. Small sample. But last year, he hit 236, 284, 341 with five homers and 11 stolen bases in A-ball. He's a career 249 hitter with a 300 OBP with six homers in 169 games. So that's just not good enough for number one. But I want to be clear. We talked about this a little bit earlier when we did the Giants and the Tigers because we were where they draft at. He wasn't a true one in the 2016 draft as being like the best player. He was 1-1 because he agreed to a below-bonus deal so they could pick up Kevin Gowdy, which also hasn't worked out that well because he's got Tommy John now.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's 1-1 in that skill. He's still a good player. Remember, he's kind of – him and Blake Rutherford was the cap. Remember that? That was the big comparison going around.
That hasn't worked out real well either.
Well, I joked around in my write-up for both of them. They're still getting compared, but about 150 spots lower than you would have thought. But, you know, the thing with Moniak, though, he signed for $3 million on slot, which we talked about. That's a lot of money, $3 million. You can do a lot with that and with the way the draft rules are set up. But I'm not closing the book here. I feel like I'm writing a eulogy for him. I'm not doing that. But, you know, I went back and looked at my projections. I had 20 homer bat with like a 280, 290 average was my initial projections for him when he came out of high school. But in 2016, I dug into his batted ball profile a lot. You ready for this number? He hit the ball on the ground when he made contact 51% of the time.
Ooh.
You can't do anything with that. But he followed up in 2017 with 47%. So that obviously has to change. But if you watch him on YouTube and stuff, and you watch various clips, the swing is still beautiful. Like, I love the swing. I bet on that swing mechanically. I mean, he has a hitch that you sometimes see. You could tell in the video you watch or different games looped together, because he's got a little bit different. He's got a hitch he develops sometimes, which is a problem. It's going to affect the timing. But maybe it's something. Maybe it's good for him, because hitting the ball on the ground means you're slightly out front a little bit. So if you can get a little hitch, slow up the timing a little bit, maybe it's good in a weird roundabout way. But, you know, I'm still betting on the speed. I think the speed is still plus. I think he's going to stick in center. But I don't think he's better than Haseley. And I think Haseley, being a college bat, will move a lot faster. The Phillies have no reason to rush Moniak, especially because he hasn't proven that he needs to be rushed. Hasn't proven he can hit past A-ball yet. Hasn't proven he can hit in A-ball yet. So it's going to be a little bit. He needs to add some muscle, drive the ball a little bit. The bat's not good enough to survive in the corner, so he needs to play center field. He's not going to hit for enough power, and especially with that batted ball profile, it's just not going to happen. You know, he's the perfect player if you like to gamble in dynasty leagues, if you want to include him as a throw-in in a trade, because I'm sure his owner might be a little frustrated with the lack of, you know what I mean?
I still think the owner's like looking at the guy.
Right, they paid a lot
for
him.
So, yeah.
Right. Right, but you also look at guys that scout stat lines, and you look at it just like, ugh, you know, maybe I need to get rid of this dude, and they might be right, but he might be a good dude. I'm not saying trade for him, but I'm saying trade for somebody else and maybe ask if you can get him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, maybe say, hey, maybe what if you throw in Moniak, I'll throw in this back-end starting prospect. You know what I mean? Something like that. But I'm not closing the book on Moniak, but I'm in the process of doing that, and it's very early to do that, but the batted ball profile, if it doesn't change, he's just not going to be a useful player.
He's got a very Christian Yelich ground ball rate.
That was the comp.
And I still think that maybe is his ceiling, but in as much as we like Christian Yelich, the reason we like Christian Yelich is because he's got, while he doesn't have an extremely high ceiling, is he's got a really safe floor year to year, and I just don't know if we have that with Moniak as well.
Yeah, we don't as of right now. I mean, it could change. He's obviously the pedigree is there, but
he's still young. He's 19 years old. Gonna be 20,
right.
20 early in the season.
Right. And it's an interesting case. If you own him in Dynasty League, I want you to hit me up on Twitter and let me know what your plans are with him. Just because it's curious. I don't own him anywhere.
Yeah, me neither.
That's not by design, because he's the guy I wanted to get at least a piece of, you know, because he's talented. But I don't have any pieces of him, and might be a little fortunate that way.
Yeah, no, I have all the shares of Blake Rutherford instead.
Ooh, same. He's got similar problems. We'll get to him in a couple of days.
Yeah.
But another prospect too for the Phillies. It might be up a little bit this year. He's in Double A. To shift gears a little bit, they traded him for Freddie Galvis. It was Enel De Los Santos. He's a former Mariner prospect, then Padre prospect. He's a nice back end starter. Easy fastball. Like, you watch him, it looks like he's throwing 70. You watch him, but it's hit 93. Bumps up to 96 when he needs it. 12-6 breaking ball and the changeup are both inconsistent. No usable secondary right now, but they'll get better. He's kind of the ground ball strikeout guy. 138 strikeouts in 150 innings in Double A with the Padres. So he's got skills. Hopefully he can use them. Phillies are flush in pitching, man. Spencer Howard, they just took him 45th overall this summer. Former walk-on in school through mid-80s at Cal Poly. Through mid-80s, now he sits 95. So that's good. 6'3", 205, ideal pitcher's frame. Was a very successful reliever in college. He's a starter now. Above-average fastball with a nice little cutter-slider hybrid. Kind of reminds me of Lance Lynn. Changeup needs work. Is very fastball-heavy reliant. Mid-rotation starter or late-inning reliever. People still say the same about Lance Lynn, because he throws fastball so much. Doesn't really have a good breaking ball. Features a cutter to keep lefties off balance. That's what you're looking at here. 6'3", 205. Lynn used to be a bigger guy. Lost a lot of weight to get more conditioned, and it worked out for him. But Howard's a bigger dude. So I think he's a nice guy to take a flyer on. He should be real cheap. Second-round pick nobody's talking about. Ranger Suarez is a nice pitching for them. Soft tosser, command control guy. High 80s fastball. Now it sits 91, 93. Can throw it on a dime. His career ERA. ERA, not the best stat for evaluating pitchers, right? But when a guy's career ERA as a starting pitcher is 2.09, that's pretty decent, right? Like, you have to take that into consideration. But the strikeout totals aren't huge. A little bit less than one per inning. Had a nice velocity spike, though, this year. So that's encouraging because now he's learning to pitch with better stuff. He's already been successful at the command and control aspect of it. But now he's got the better stuff. Kind of like Kevin Durant in the NBA. You know, he used to be 6'4". So he knows how to handle the ball. And then all of a sudden he had a growth spurt. Now he's 6'11". So it's similar to that. He's obviously not, you know, going to be the best player in his sport. But Ranger Suarez is a guy, he learned his player development curve was kind of backwards in the sense that he learned the command and control thing first, which isn't normally what you do. Now he's got the stuff. So hopefully he can still harness it. Jojo Romero went to the world famous Yavapai Junior College in Arizona. If you know anything about that, that's where Willie Calhoun went to school. It's a joke of a ballpark up there. It teaches you how to pitch, though. It teaches you how to keep the ball in the yard, and that's what he does. 129 innings, 128 strikeouts for the lefty, fourth-round pick. Velocity is up there, 6 foot. He looks shorter than that, he's listed at 6 foot. I bet he's about 5'10". Probably number four starter, but I think he's a mid-rotation arm because I think his velocity is going to spike up a little bit just by watching the pitch. The body looks mature. I don't think he's going to grow or anything, but he looks like he's got that second gear. So I'm going to bet on him. Velocity has already jumped a little bit since college, and now he's up to 96, and he sits 91, 94. He was high 80s in school, just like Suarez was. So he's a nice guy. A couple middle infield prospects, Daniel Brito. I'm getting a little deeper in the system now. Daniel Brito, 284, 355, 421, 18 years old in low A. He's second base only, but he's got some pop. Arquimedes Gamboa hasn't really hit, but he's got the shortstop skills. He's 19 years old, 261, 328, 378 in the Sally League. Glove first guy right now, switch hitter. I like to swing. I'm betting on that, taking the step forward. And then remember Cornelius Randolph? He was a first-round pick 2015. Kind of been hurt. He was a shortstop in high school, never played the infield since pro ball, moved him out to left field. Kind of been hurt, and like I said, only played 122 games in 2 years. 250, 338, 402 is career slash line. Not great. I'm still betting on him, though, because I like the approach. If anything, he can be, and I don't only maybe these, because he can kind of be, maybe they'll turn him into a utility man that can play a couple different positions or something. I'm hedging my bet a little bit on him, but I like him. I like the swing, so I'm going to bet on him. I bet on what my eyes tell me with him, and I like it going forward. He's not premium upside or anything, but it's a guy to monitor.
All right. Any other guys you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
No, I touched on about 20 or so guys. So I think I'm good.
It's a good system.
Yeah, it's really deep. There's a couple guys like Brady Falter and stuff. If you didn't hear me talk on your radio show, we went in depth on two lesser known Philly starters that got through a couple no hitters this year and are more of the stuff ahead of or command control ahead of stuff guys. Let's see, this system is deep, and they're set up very nice to be a potential powerhouse if they're going to spend some money.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. We're going to keep plugging along on these prospect pods and the team previews. Don't forget to get our draft kit when it comes out, hopefully in early February. That's going to do it for us. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.